League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Fans, welcome into the Green 19 podcast brought to you by JS Online and PackersNews.com. I'm Cassidy Hill, joined by Tom Silverstein and Ryan Wood. As always, guys, hello. How are y'all today?
Great. Beautiful
day. I am just doing wonderful. Yeah, the weather's finally warming up here, and I'm a big fan of that.
It is warming up. Let's see. It's 61 in Green Bay right now. Feels practically balmy. Were y'all around any of the guys this weekend at rookie minicamp? Packers hosted their rookie minicamp this weekend that said, yo man, this is the coldest weather I've ever been in. And it was like in the 50s. And I was just like, oh, you poor baby.
I'll never forget the look on Tariq Carpenter's face when he was talking about how it's colder up here. And I'm standing, this is Saturday, and I'm standing in shorts in the Packers locker room, which, by the way, was great to be back in the Packers locker room this past week for the first time in over 2 years. And I kind of interrupted. I was like, yeah, man, just so you know, this is actually warm. He looked at me like, you got to be kidding me. Like there's no way this is possible. And I'm like, eh. It was what? It was like 50s this weekend.
53, yeah.
Yeah, low 50s. I'm like, no, this is warm. You know, Tariq Carpenter played college ball at Georgia Tech. It's a little different down there, but the Packers got quite a few of those guys that are coming from warm culture climates and are going to have to make that adjustment.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
They always do. You know, most guys are from Florida or California. You know, I mean, from the South, football's so big there. Think about all the guys they've got who've had to adjust to the cold. I mean, Aaron Rodgers is from California. And Brett Favre was from Mississippi. So it's, you know, if you're an athlete, you probably can adjust to, if you're a really good athlete, a really good player, you can adjust to whatever.
Yeah.
Cassidy's a great example of that acclimation coming from Alabama and Florida, and you've acclimated to the climate up here just nicely.
Yeah. Well, I got thrown into it in November, so I had no choice. It was that or die.
I'll always feel very fortunate to have moved from South Carolina to here in August instead of, like you said, November. That was helpful my first year.
It was funny though when I tweeted something about some of the guys saying that, and I was like, oh, they're in for a fun winter, and somebody was like, well, that's just because that's not what they're used to. I bet if you went to Athens in August, you would die from the humidity. And I was like,
oh, it's so true.
I responded. I was like, God, I'm from Mobile. Trust me, I can handle the humidity in August. Anyways, we got really sidetracked really quick by the weather. Let's get back onto rookie minicamp. The Packers had 51 guys at rookie minicamp this weekend on Friday and Saturday, 11 draft picks, 14 UDFAs, 18 tryout players, and 8 guys that were on the roster last year that were invited to come back. Spoon, I know you and I were talking this weekend and trying to figure out the numbers and the exact parameter for the guys that could come back. But could you kind of explain to people as well as you can why some of these people at rookie minicamp were not, in fact, rookies?
Probably not, but I'll try. I mean,
I appreciate the humility.
There's a certain amount of, if you have, you know, if you're a first-year player, like you're not a rookie, but you're a first-year player and you haven't been on a practice squad for more than, I don't know, it's all kind of crazy rules. But basically, if you're essentially a rookie-type player, like maybe mm-hmm. you've been in a camp or you've been on a practice squad, then you're allowed to practice, but it's a very limited group and it's mostly guys who did not make it on to the 53 at all last year, guys like Innis Gaines, Ray Wilborn. So yeah, there's just a few guys like that, but other than that, it's all rookies.
Yeah. It was kind of almost a full camp with having that many people out there. Matt LaFleur said he was sending them home with homework and the position coaches would as well, with things that they needed to sort of work on before they got back for OTAs. They had to send them home after rookie minicamp. So they went home presumably beginning of this week. From your experience in the past, guys, can you see a jump in these rookies between rookie minicamp and OTAs? Spoon?
No. You can't really tell anything. I would say maybe you could see a jump from the beginning of OTAs to the end of minicamp, maybe. Or maybe from the beginning of OTAs to the beginning of training camp. But there's nothing, you know, there's nothing that really what they did during this mini camp. There's no 11 on 11s. There's no hitting. They're in shorts. They're basically just running basic plays and they're trying to get a feel for, as LaFleur said, they want to see what they can retain. Mm-hmm. They give them a bunch of stuff and see how well they can retain it. They want to get familiar with the guys. They want them to get familiar with what their practice procedure is like. You know, every practice is the same. You start out doing, you know, individual drills. Then you have a walkthrough. Then you move on to, you know, other drills. And then you do, you know, some 7-on-7 or something like that, and then some special teams. So really it's kind of just getting them integrated into the system of how they practice.
Right. Yeah, to me, the next really big jump is day three of training camp. The first time they put on pads is the next time that you can really see a difference. Because when they put on pads, everything changes. It's no longer working out in shorts. It's actually playing football. And like Spoon said, this wasn't a lot of football this weekend. And OTAs is about, especially for rookies, it's about learning the playbook and getting that solid foundation going into camp. So that when you put on the pads and you're actually playing football, the head knowledge is there and you can just go play. You can just play the game. But until we see them in pads, that to me is the next real big milestone.
Yeah. And how many times have we heard about what a great off season this guy has had,
right?
You know, and then he throws on the pads and he's in within 3 days, he's running seventh string. You know,
Montrevious Adams is a great example of that.
Yeah.
The guy came from Auburn. He was a big time recruit at Auburn. He had a really good senior season at Auburn, had a lot of athleticism, really big, you know, defensive tackle that could really move in shorts. And then he put on the pads and it changed. And it didn't help that he got injured his first camp either. But guys that are really athletic, you know, Devontae Wyatt, first round pick. Matt LaFleur, I asked Matt LaFleur this weekend about his movement skills. He said, yeah, you can see why he's a first round pick, the way that he moves when he's in shorts at that size, ran a 4.77 at the combine. But you got to see a Devontae Wyatt or any defensive lineman in pads, because this game is built on physicality at the end. That's the bedrock of what makes successful NFL players is their physicality, especially in the trenches. So seeing guys in pads is really everything.
Well, that and thinking on the move too, like all of a sudden you add in the physical aspect of someone actually blocking you or, you know, you getting out of your gap, and, you know, it's a lot easier to stay in your gap when some guy's not really blocking you that hard. It's, you know, the smarts part of the game comes in, and that's when you see a lot of guys just kind of drop out and then, you know, you realize they're not as good. And the fun part about training camp is that you see guys start to emerge. You know, I mean, it took Devondre Campbell wasn't with the first unit to start out training camp. And what it took about 3 or 4 days. And then, you know, all of a sudden he's with the ones. And so that's kind of how you see stuff develop. And it's usually during training camp that you see the biggest jumps.
Before we get into some of these guys like Devontae Wyatt and what he showed, Quay Walker, Christian Watson, let's go back to what you said about there's not a lot of football that you can show during rookie minicamp. That being said, there is still a subset of these players, 18 tryout guys, that are trying to show everything they can in these 2 days for, with the Packers, what amounts to one roster spot. How can they show enough during that time to kind of fight for that roster spot? Do you feel like that last roster spot will go to one of these tryout players, or will they try to sign someone new?
Their athleticism is important because it is an athletic game. And I think the recall as well, how quickly they can retain information and apply that on the field. I mean, coaches are looking at those sort of things. But yeah, I mean, you make a great point. 18 tryout guys for one spot, rosters at 89. That's competitive. I mean, it was, you know, even if it wasn't a ton of real football this weekend, it was very competitive. So we'll have to see, and we'll see in the next, I would say, week or so. We'll see who the winner of that one roster spot was.
And it might be more than one roster spot because they can cut guys who are, you know, who've been through the offseason program, and they'll evaluate and say, okay, is this guy, this is the bottom of our depth chart at this position, and we've got these tryout guys. Who's better? You know, this tryout guy, the top of the tryout guys, or the bottom of the bottom of the depth chart? And then they'll make a decision whether to add some guys. So there'll probably be some roster moves, I think. And I'm sure they'll sign somebody.
That's a very good point about it could be more than one guy. And that's something Matt LaFleur was asked about, was how do you evaluate these tryout guys for a position? And is it their pure athleticism versus needs on your roster? And he said it's kind of a combination, and you just have to weigh one versus the other. And that was something that him and Brad Gutekunst were going to sit down this weekend and do. And I asked him as well, you know, when you're in here, when you only have 2 days with these guys, what are the markers you're looking for? And to Ryan's point, he said it's everything. It's not just on the field. It's how they carry themselves through the building. It's how they interact with the other people here. It's everything they say, everything they do, every single moment that we see them, they're being evaluated. So it is also, you know, how do they fit into this culture? How do they fit into this locker room? Before we move.
One other thing about the tryout guys is that, so they write up reports on all of them. And I can remember a guy, Greg Van Roten, who was a tryout guy. I have to go back and look. I think this was the case. It's happened with other guys, but you know, you're a tryout guy, and then training camp, someone gets hurt, and you know, they have you on their list, and they say, all right, come to camp. You know, we had you in the tryout, come to camp. And you know, then all of a sudden you got a shot to make the team from training camp. So the tryout process is kind of ongoing. I think if you, the whole thing about getting into one of those tryout camps is that you get a chance to get in the mind of the team, you know, of the personnel people.
Yeah, get on their radar. I know that there, like I said, there was a lot of them moving around out there. It was hard to kind of pinpoint. There was one tryout guy, a receiver, Kiki Chisholm from Missouri, I believe it was. Yes, Missouri. He's technically smaller than Christian Watson. He's 6'4", 209, but he seemed so much taller. He was so big, and he was really, really physical. Was able to kind of body some guys up across the middle in traffic, and of course use his length downfield as well. Like I said, I know there's a lot, and then I know that they have needs else place too, but he's one tryout guy I'm kind of keeping an eye on to see if he makes it into a camp somewhere too. Was there anyone like that that caught y'all's eye, Ryan?
No, not from a tryout perspective. But I'll say this. I thought that Quay Walker has the natural athleticism and the ball skills to be a coverage linebacker. And again, everything we say about these guys is comes with the caveat we've not seen them in pads, and that's essential. But I mean, he flashed that coverage ability in the 7-on-7. Mm-hmm. He had a pick his first day. And the thing to remember about Quay Walker, I mean, he came up, he was late to football. He didn't really play as a basketball player first. He played a little bit as a youth, but really didn't play until his sophomore year of high school. And he started, his first position was receiver. And that's where his coaches put him, was at receiver, because of his athleticism and his natural hands and ability to play the ball. And so you saw that a little bit this weekend. And you can see why they drafted Quay Walker with the 22nd overall pick, with the idea of pairing him with Devondre Campbell, because you've got two guys who, in theory, should be athletic, rangy linebackers and do a bit of everything, including coverage. And that's where drafting and implementing Quay Walker into the defense has the potential to fundamentally change how they play defense schematically, because now you've got two covered guys at linebacker instead of having to drop that safety. So again, we'll have to see that in pads, but it was, you can notice that on the field.
Yeah. He had that interception over the middle, like you said, in 7-on-7. And then the next day in 1-on-1s, he tracked a receiver down the sideline and broke up a pass. And so he could be really fun to watch. Spoon, I just kind of want to get your opinion on this too. Again, I know it was only 2 days. I know it wasn't pads, but how do you kind of see Quay Walker fitting into this defense? Do you agree with what Ryan said now that you've at least seen him under Joe Barry's tutelage a little bit?
Yeah, he can run and he's got long arms like Campbell. So I did see him break up some passes in one-on-one coverage against tight ends. You can see what they like about him. He can really run. I think he's got that wingspan that, he drops into zone coverage. He can take away some throwing lanes. He can close on guys, in the flat underneath stuff. So, yeah, I mean, you could see what they like about him, and now they'll find out whether, he can pick up the defense, because it's, they put a lot of strain on their inside linebackers, mm-hmm. and he's going to have to, be pretty assignment sure. So that'll be the next step.
As athletic and as long as he was, they also added a lot of bulk in this draft and had it at rookie minicamp, starting with Devontae Wyatt on down. The three offensive linemen, even some of the UDFA offensive linemen they brought in, were huge. Guys, do you think how much of that was a conscious decision to sort of bulk up, especially in the trenches, after they were kind of pushed around a little bit by San Francisco, at least on special teams? Because that's what some of these guys are going to be headed to, is special teams first. Ryan, how important do you think that was, especially now having seen these guys in person and seeing their size?
Well, it's a big man's game, going back to Ted Thompson, the Packers have always emphasized bulk and size because you need that on the field. The fact that they drafted three offensive linemen, I don't think that was a coincidence. I think that was a targeted approach by Brian Gutekunst, and they're always looking for size. You want size, you want speed. There's no question that's something that they wanted to do.
Caleb Jones was one of the offensive linemen there. He was there as a UDFA, number 72. Let's see if we can pull up his measurables here, because 6'9", 320 pounds. That's a big old guy. I believe Matt LaFleur said it was the biggest guy he had ever coached.
He's a big man. Yeah. 320 only? I thought he was like
360. I thought it was like 370. 60.
That was his latest from Indiana. He did not have a draft profile from what I can tell. Let me see if I can find another one.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, 370. You're right. He has put on a little bit.
He's just, I think at one point at Indiana, he was like close to 400 pounds. So I think he's actually lost some weight to drop to 270, which sounds absurd. But, you know, 6'9", 370, Matt LaFleur says the biggest player that he's ever coached. And I'm sure Matt LaFleur is not the only NFL coach that could say that. Now, why was he not drafted? Well, 6'9", 370 is big, but you got to have movement skills too, especially at offensive tackle. And so that's going to be the big thing for him. And to Spoon's earlier point, once the pads come on, how he moves in pads, his ability to mentally work through that, the blocking schemes and whatnot, that's going to be very important for him.
Yeah. He was fun to watch though. He was a big old guy. It reminded me a lot of Mount Cody. I don't know if y'all remember Terrence Cody. He played at Alabama and then he went to play on for the Baltimore Ravens, and that's what they called him, Mount Cody. Anyways.
How big was Terrence Cody?
Let's see. At one point, he blocked up like more than one field goal in a game against Tennessee. Terrence Cody was 6'4", 370.
Wow.
So the same weight, but 5 inches shorter.
More bulk around. As a wide man.
He was a wide old man. Guys, let's look at some of these other draft picks, especially on offense. Christian Watson, of course, was going to have all eyes on him. He was not the first rounder. He was the third player actually taken by the Packers in the second. He was taken second round, pick 34 overall. But I would argue he had more eyes on him than anyone this weekend, and will have more eyes on him heading into the offseason and through training camp. Again, only 2 days. No pads, all the balls were on air pretty much. But what stood out about Christian Watson? Ryan, I'll go ahead and start with you.
Well, he's big. There's no question. He's a great example of a guy.
Get what Brian Gutekunst means now by bigger jointed.
Exactly. Yeah.
He's broader than MVS, especially in the shoulders.
He's a big guy. He's a great example of a guy that I really want to see in pads because he's got the size, right? But his ability to get off the line of scrimmage against press man is going to be huge. And you can't really tell that until they actually put the pads on. You know, the other thing with him, the hands, you know, he dropped a couple passes on air, and you don't need to make too much out of that early on. I mean, it's his first practice that, you know, he's dropping a couple balls, but you know, he's got the size and he can move. He's fast. His speed was evident, but his consistency playing the football, that was a knock on him coming out of North Dakota State, and that's something that he's going to have to show at this level. So something to keep an eye on is his hands and his consistency catching the football.
Spoon, is that a concern in May?
It's going to be a concern all through his first year because that was the big knock on him was his hands. He dropped way too many passes. And so that'll be something to watch throughout his entire rookie year. My impression of him is that he is extremely quick off the line of scrimmage. I watched him quite a bit just to get a feel for how he ran. And it was hard for just about anybody to match him off the line of scrimmage. Now, he is extremely skinny. I mean, he's got no waist. He's, you know, he's of course has like no fat on him, but he's going to get knocked around. People are going to come up to him and they're going to, you know, hassle him at the line of scrimmage. And that's the kind of stuff he's going to have to learn to deal with. You know, he doesn't, even if he had the feet of Davante Adams, you still got to have that strength to be able to get off a guy shoving you in the chest. And that's going to be his big thing, is being able to handle the physicality of it, because he may be built different than MVS, but he's not built up yet. You know, he's gonna, I think over time he'll be a bigger, stronger type player, but man, he is, you know, not a huge fella, and it's going to be really interesting to see how he handles guys up in his face and blocking too.
And I think that for him, that's going to be maybe the biggest rookie transition for him, is getting off the line, because that's where it makes a difference. That, you know, in college, he wasn't going against press man against SEC corners. I mean, he was going against, you know, at the FCS level, the type of press man that he see, it's different. It's a lot different than what he would see in the SEC.
And I don't think he faced a whole lot of press man in.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean,
what I've heard, most guys played way off him.
The competitive element is just, it's a big transition for any receiver. Cause once you get to the NFL, everyone's a professional corner. I mean, they're all good. So
I mean, we don't Eric,
but from the FCS, it's a totally different world.
Wait till Eric Stokes gets, you know, right, up one of those long arms into him. And then, you know, he gets off that, let's say he gets off that press, and then Eric Stokes can run with him. You know, a guy like that, Jair Alexander can run with him. So it's, you know, it's, there's a lot of potential there, but it's going to take time.
I was looking to see how much Davante Adams grew from his first year to now. He's about the same weight, but he's a little bit shorter than Christian Watson. So he can carry that weight in more bulk.
Davante Adams was, you know, he had decent size. I mean, he was built. You could see his frame was big. And then I think it was his second year or third year, he just went into the weight room and went crazy. And it led to a pretty lousy year. That must have been his second year.
15, yeah.
Yeah. And he realized then that he had overdone it in the weight room. And
well, even still, I wouldn't consider Davante Adams to this day the strength of his game is a strength of his game. He's so quick. It's not speed. He's probably the quickest NFL receiver off the line of scrimmage because of that basketball background, his ability, his improvisational skills with his movement. That's what separates his release package.
Well, yeah, but he's also, it's the combination. The reason he's one of the best is because he is also strong, and he runs a slant on you. It's hard to get, you know, break in front of him. It's hard to get him off his course. And so, you know, it's a combination. You know, you can be really good off the line with your feet and be a really good receiver, but, you know, he's one of the best because he can combine the strength and the speed.
I thought it was interesting this weekend. The Packers posted a picture of Christian Watson on their Instagram, and Davante Adams commented on it and said, "Kid's going to be the truth." So he clearly has Davante Adams still.
I missed that. No.
Yeah, that was cool. Little nod from Tay there. Another one of the receivers that was drafted, Romeo Dubs. Guys, I don't know about you, but and maybe it's because we have high expectations for Christian Watson, but I came away more impressed with Romeo than anyone. He seemed to always have a step on a guy, no matter who he was facing, and have decent separation. Can these two both fit into this receiving core early on?
Well, I think that Romeo Dubs showed that he can run, which was important. And I guess if, you know, if you tracked him in college, not a surprise, or he was a punt returner, you don't put guys that can't run at punt return.
Right.
That running though, and I've said it before, his skills are going to most likely translate to special teams before they translate to receiver. I mean, he's going to have to cut his teeth through special teams before he gets into the offense. And then, I mean, he'll get a chance. I mean, this receiving room is obviously wide open. It's tailor made for guys to take opportunity. So we'll see if he's able to do that. But yeah, his first impact's going to be on special teams.
I thought he was kind of intriguing to me. I watched him quite a bit too, and he definitely has the size. I mean, he could, if, you know, he can learn the system and, you know, be reliable catching the ball. He's got the size to play right away, the size and strength, I think. He'll be an interesting guy to watch because he's put together. He's pretty smooth. I could see what they liked about him. I just don't know what the transition to learning an offense and putting it all together will be like for him. But I thought he looked the part.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of using him as a punt returner, we saw something interesting this weekend with Rich Bisaccia was having punt returners catch tennis balls instead of footballs. Spoon, I know you've been around this game a long time. Is that a common tactic? It seemed new. And what's he teaching them with tennis balls, just to narrow down their catch radius?
I think it's just a hand-eye coordination thing. You know, if you can catch a tennis ball, then you can, you know, then a football looks huge.
You can dodge you can dodge a ball.
Who was it? Luke Getsy, when he was wide receivers coach, used tennis balls all the time on the sidelines. He would have his guys catch tennis balls. So I think it's just a way to work on hand-eye coordination. And it's the first time I've ever seen anybody do that. But, you know, I'm trying not to make too much out of the different things that he does. Mm-hmm. It really was watching him, you know, very basic what he was working on, but, you know, he's out there coaching him on every single thing. And you can see he's starting at the very basics, mm-hmm. you know, how three guys run down and work a triangle in coverage so that, you know, they don't let a returner get outside, bust through the middle. You know, you could kind of just see that he's starting at the, you know, very beginning.
I thought the most interesting thing watching him was honestly during the warmups, because, you know, you see coaches kind of move around through that time and position coaches will stay with their guys, but Rich Bisaccia and Matt LaFleur and the strength coach were the only ones that were kind of walking around during that time. And like Matt LaFleur, he went through and he spoke to every single guy there. This is somebody that's had head coaching experience before. And so how much can he bring just in experience wise? And, you know, Ryan, Matt LaFleur talked about having Rich Bisaccia out there and, you know, keeping these guys on their toes, but also putting an arm around them. How much can he kind of just help this coaching staff establish? I'm not sure what the word I'm looking for is. Good thing I don't work in words. What can he bring to this coaching staff? That's what I'm trying to get at, Ryan.
Well, another point that Matt LaFleur made at the owners meeting was how he's very much looking forward to Rich Bisaccia's influence on the roster extending past just special teams. I mean, he thinks that he's a guy that can have an impact on the team overall because of his energy, because of his experience, his pedigree. And, you know, the fact that he's been a head coach doesn't hurt at all. So, yeah, that's something that Matt LaFleur is looking for. I mean, obviously, his first job is to fix the special teams. That has to get done this offseason. And that's going to be Rich Bisaccia's priority. But he's not in a box. I mean, he's not limited to that. And I think that Matt LaFleur and even Brian Gutekunst spoke of this too. I mean, they both see the greater benefit that he can bring to the team and to the roster as a whole. I think it'll be very interesting once the veterans get in for OTAs to see how he works. And, this rookie minicamp, you know, there's a reason why he's going up and down the stretch line. I mean, these rookies, most of them, if they contribute to the team, will be on special teams. So it's a very important first introduction for the special teams coordinator. But then how he integrates the veterans with the rookies and what it looks like when they've got the entire roster together, I think that'll be very interesting to see.
Speaking of veterans coming in for OTAs and guys still on their rookie contract, but not yet a veteran, one of those is Jordan Love. Matt LaFleur said, you know, this is his time to sort of grow. He's going to be running the offense since they know that Aaron Rodgers likely won't be there. Spoon, how important is this time for Jordan Love? If you are Jordan Love, what are you sitting at home doing right now, working on preparing to come to OTAs in a couple of weeks here?
Well, he's been there the whole time, you know, so he's been working out with all the
sitting at home in Green Bay,
his teammates. Yeah. So he's, you know, he's just got to take command and play with some command. And, you know, the thing I keep remembering them saying over and over again is he needs to let it rip. And, you know, oftentimes you just don't see that with him. And so this has got to be the camp where he just goes and shows he can play. That's really it. I mean, he's got to go out on the field. He has to know everything, you know, the offense, but then just play with confidence and try to dominate. That's the thing that's left for him to do.
Ryan, is this offseason just as much about upping Jordan Love's trade value as seeing if he can still fit into this team?
Well, I don't think that those are mutually exclusive. You know, I think that by taking the command that Spoon's talking about, he's upping his trade value. I mean, that's what he needs to do. I'm looking forward to seeing how many receivers, top receivers that he's going to be working with this offseason, right? Because he didn't have them last offseason. Davante Adams was obviously out, but so correct me if I'm wrong, but I know Marquez Valdes-Scantling and Equanimee St. Brown. I'm not sure that Al Lazard participated last offseason, but the top of their depth chart was missing last offseason. So is this different this year? Is he going to be working with top receivers, or is it going to be bottom of the depth chart guys that he's going through this offseason program with? Not sure the answer to that. Well, we'll have to see, you know, because again, it's voluntary. Other than the mini camp, it's the only mandatory portion of this offseason program. Everything else is voluntary. So who shows up? Which veterans show up? Does Sammy Watkins? I would presume that he's going to be there. Does Alan Lazard show up? Does Randall Cobb show up? Those are big questions.
Guys, before we head off here, I'm going to let you each kind of take a moment. I know you were working on things over this weekend, Ryan, about the two first round picks coming from a culture that already knows how to win. Spoon, about Christian Watson and learning how to retain stuff early. Spoon, I'll let you start. Just kind of give people a quick recap of that and when they can look for that to come up on PackersNews.com.
Just kind of looking at, you know, what the experience is going to be like for him here. You know, he sort of made a big jump when he went from North Dakota State and went to the Senior Bowl and had a really good Senior Bowl. He was the practice player of the week, and kind of talked to him about, you know, okay, now he's got to go do that again in the NFL, you know, try to show that he can run with the big guys. So that's kind of it. I'm not sure when it's running, but
sometime this week.
He's got a lot to show, and it'll be interesting to see whether he can make that same kind of impression that he made in the Senior Bowl when he had to face, you know, guys, better players than he had been facing in college.
Mm-hmm. And then Ryan.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. As far as, you know, my story is already online, Packers News, you know, it's interesting that they, you know, obviously on paper, you know, that they've got Quay Walker and Devontae Wyatt, college teammates, coming in, but they, you know, they're joining Eric Stokes. So there's three Bulldogs, and there's a Georgia player on each level of this defense now, defensive line, second level linebacker, and then secondary, who were part of one of, if you know, last year and this year, the best defense in college football. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, what Kirby Smart does down there in Georgia defensively with his players is a lot, is about as close to NFL scheme as you can get in college football. I mean, I even asked Quay Walker, if, you know, said, understandably, you don't spend a lot of time studying other defenses in the SEC, but did you get a sense down there that what you were doing was more complex than even what other SEC defenses were doing? He didn't hesitate. He said, absolutely. He said, you got that sense even just based on your visits to these programs and talking about the scheme. And Quay Walker's a guy he put a lot of thought into where he wanted to play college football. And this is one of the things that he considered is wanting to be in an advanced scheme like this. So the talent level that they were around, this is not the first time that they're going to be on a field surrounded by teammates that are professional talent. I mean, Georgia, where they had 15 guys drafted and not all of them were on defense, but five first rounders that were all on defense. All three of their defensive linemen were drafted in the first round. Trevon Walker, number one, Jordan Davis, 13 to Philadelphia, and Devontae Wyatt, 28. This is not the first time that they're going to be on the field surrounded by NFL caliber talent on their defense. And then two, having that schematic base, you know, it's different in the NFL, and there's going to be a jump for sure, but that's a pretty good foundation to be starting off of in terms of when the pads do come on and you've got to think your way through the physicality of the game. They've done that at an extraordinarily high level already. They're jumping off from a higher platform than a lot of other places.
Yeah, it is a very interesting defense to kind of watch as they integrate themselves into the NFL. Like they said, you can find Ryan's story already, Tom's story coming up this week on PackersNews.com. And stay tuned to PackersNews.com for full coverage as we wrap up minicamp and then head into OTAs, which begin, I believe, in a couple of weeks, about 2 weeks here. End of May 23rd, I believe it is when they start. So we do not know who all will be here, but whoever is here, we will, like I said, have full coverage for you. Guys, thank you for your time as always. Enjoy your little bit of downtime before everyone returns to the practice field. In the meantime, we will talk to you later. This has been the Green 19 Podcast, brought to you by JS Online and PackersNews.com. Green 19!
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.